So this Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 18, the perfection of renunciation, text number 57. Chetasa sarva karmani. Mai sanyasya matparaha. Puri yogam upashitya. Machitaksaratam bhava. Chetasa, by intelligence, sarvakaramani, all kinds of activities, mai, unto me, sannyasya, giving up, matparaha, under my protection, buddhi yogam, devotional activities, upashritya, taking shelter of. Machitaha, in consciousness of me. Satatam, 24 hours a day. Bhava, just become. Translation of Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In all activities, just depend upon me. And work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. Srila Prabhupada's purport. When one acts in Krishna consciousness, he does not act as the master of the world. Just like a servant, one should act fully under the direction of the Supreme Lord. A servant has no individual independence. He acts only on the order of the master. A servant acting on behalf of the Supreme Master is unaffected by profit and loss. He simply discharges his duty faithfully in terms of the order of the Lord. Now, one may argue that Arjuna was acting under the personal direction of Krishna, but when Krishna is not present, how should one act? One acts according to the direction of Krishna in this book, as well as under the guidance of the representative of Krishna, then the result will be the same. The Sanskrit word matparaha is very important in this verse. It indicates that one has no goal in life save and except acting in Krishna consciousness just to satisfy Krishna. And while working that way, one should think of Krishna only. I've been appointed to discharge this particular duty by Krishna. While acting in such a way, one naturally has to think of Krishna. This is perfect Krishna consciousness. One should, however, note that after doing something whimsically, he should not offer the result to the Supreme Lord. That sort of duty is not in the devotional service of Krishna consciousness. One should act according to the order of Krishna. This is a very important point. That order of Krishna comes through disciple succession from the bona fide spiritual master. Therefore, the spiritual master's order should be taken as the prime duty of life. If one gets a bona fide spiritual master and acts according to his direction, then one's perfection of life and Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. Chetasa sarva karmani maya sanyasya matraha uriyogam upashitya machitak saratam bhava. And all activities just depend upon me, work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. The philosophy of Krishna consciousness is actually quite simple. But Maya makes everything complicated. Therefore, something that's very simple becomes very difficult to understand under the spell of illusion. And things that are very complicated that no one can understand, people just accept because they can't understand it. For instance, people accept that life comes from matter. Now, there's no experience of any time, any life coming out of matter. For instance, right now you're sitting on matter. And just like a bird sits on eggs, and eventually something hatches, so how long do you think it'll have to sit on the floor before it hatches into something? You might have to sit there for a long time. But people accept it. Life is coming out of matter. They don't think about, they have absolutely no experience of any life coming out of matter. They used to think that out of rice come scorpions, until they found out that actually the scorpions lay their eggs in the rice, and the eggs are actually coming out of the scorpions are coming from the eggs, not from the rice. Similarly, they used to have other theories about spontaneously generating living entities, bed bugs. If you're in your bed and you sweat a lot, then from your perspiration will come bed bugs. So it's not because the bed is contaminated with bed bugs, because of your perspiration. So we have to check you before you enter into the temple and make sure you're not perspiring, because we don't want any bed bugs in the temple. But these things are not really accepted anymore. They know that the bed bugs are there, and at a certain time, in a certain circumstance, they manifest. When the summer comes and they wake up and they see there's a feast in their bed, then they go for it. Similarly, there are other things that in the material world are actually don't exist that people actually accept blindly, actually. But because the scientists are able to convince them by so much word jugglery and by deceit. For instance, sometimes you may go to a museum and you see in the museum there's a big, big dinosaur the size of this room. And you think, wow, that's pretty impressive. I wonder where they got those bones from. You know, and then you find out they got a bone that big and they made a dinosaur the size of the room from it. And people go to the museum and they fold their hands into the dead bones and they worship them. Oh, here's our worshipful deities. This is where we all came from, the dinosaurs. We worship the dinosaurs. But here it mentions that in order to discover what actually is reality, we have to have certain preliminary understandings. One of them is that there is a person who owns everything. Now, unless we understand that, then Krishna consciousness, there's no question of devotional service. And therefore it's understood that devotional service begins at the point of liberation. Liberation from what? Liberation from hankering and lamentation. And what is that hankering and lamentation? In a previous verse in the seventh chapter, it explains that everyone in the material world is hankering to become God, and everyone is lamenting the fact they can't do it. That's where all the hankering and lamentation comes from. And because we're hankering to become God, and because we're angry that we can't, therefore our relationships with each other is spoiled. Why don't you accept me as God? Why are you trying to become God yourself? Don't you see that the self-effulgent God is before me, before you? Why don't you surrender? So we hope everyone helps us, will accept us as God, and we're angry because they don't. And therefore, the actual God, by the mercy of the illusory energy, is covered. We're not perceptive of the actual God. So at least theoretically, one has to give up this idea that I am the proprietor. Now, of course, in the background, we have some evidence that there is a God, at least theoretically. For instance, Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita. So Bhagavad Gita we put forward as evidence that this is perfect knowledge, and only God could actually put forward perfect knowledge that would be applicable past, present, and future. Now, part of that knowledge, Krishna explains, number one, that we're eternal. Now, that should be perceivable to everyone, the fact that our bodies are changing, but we're not changing. So that means that presently, if we're all eternal, we're right now eternally subjected to illusion. Now, if we can't understand that we're eternal, and that we're eternally subject to a delusion, then there's no sense of going on with the discussion. Because if we don't think we're an illusion, therefore we think we know everything. And if we agree that actually I'm eternal, but right now I'm thinking I'm temporary, then the idea of illusion comes in. And the fact that we're not under the control of illusion. Now the question is, who's controlling illusion? Now obviously we're not controlling illusion because we can't just brush it aside. Oh, illusion, I don't want you. Oh, it's not there anymore. No, there is something controlling illusion, as there is something controlling the universe that's beyond our ability to control. For instance, time is changing everything. And in case you don't believe me, look at your baby picture. Now, if you say, well, that's not me, you're right, it isn't you. But you thought it was you. And it's completely disappeared. No one goes to the graveyard and buries the picture. This is the only thing left of me. It disappeared. And everyone cries and buries the picture. No, because we know it wasn't us, although we thought it was us, but now we know it wasn't us, because it disappeared. And we're still here. Now, what's changing everything is time. We call it time. But time is not changing. Although time has changed everything, but time is just as much the same, is exactly the same it was when we were babies. Time hasn't changed. No one reads in the newspaper one day, time grew very, very old, and it died. And everyone's lamenting, well, time was all right. We're glad it's dead, though. It was making us grow too old. No, time never changes, although time changes everything. So we have two things here. One is that we don't change, and the other thing is that time doesn't change. So there's two things beyond matter, but there's one thing that illusion doesn't influence, namely time, but illusion is influencing us, although we're also eternal. So there are many energies at stake. There are many energies here that we're aware of. Two of them don't change, namely ourselves and time. And the third thing, namely matter, is changing all the time. Now the question is, if time is not changing and is controlling everything, then we have to accept time at least as God, as the supreme controller. Now if time was arbitrarily changing everything, that one day we grow old, one next day we grow young, one day the sun rises in the east, the next day it rises in the west, and then one day it hits the earth, and the other day we bounce off the moon. Then you have to say that everything is going on by chance, like you throw a bunch of balls up in the air and you can only guess where they're going to land. But if everything is in control, is under control, as Lord Brahma said, it's chaksha esha savitasa kalagrahanam, Rajasamasa Suramurti Sheshateja Yas Yagaya Brahmati Sambrita Kala Chakra Govindam Adi Purushang Tamahang Bhujami. So Lord Brahma, who we say is the who created the universe, he happened to mention that the sun is one of the eyes of Krishna, of Govinda. Now he worships the sun, actually he worships Govinda. Why? Because the sun is full of infinite effulgence. Infinite effulgence and infinite heat and light. Now, why does he worship Govinda? Because he's put this object in an orbit, and it's exactly in its orbit. Just like you may take a bull and you may attach it by its nose to a pole. And the bull, although he's so powerful, he can walk around that pole and drag a weight, which would take 50 men to pull. He drags the weight around in a circle to crush grains. But although he's so powerful that it would take 50 men to pull that weight, he cannot move one inch beyond the rope. Similarly, although the sun is full of infinite effulgence, heat and light, still, it doesn't move one inch beyond its orbit. As a matter of fact, if you have a watch, then the watch can only imperfectly measure the movements of the sun. Now, no one will claim that a watch came about by accident, that everyone knows a watch was created by intelligent people, and it's utilized by intelligent people, but it's utilized to measure the movements of a much more powerful entity, much more powerful than a watch, namely the sun, which is much more exacting than our little tiny watches. So as we can suppose, as we understand that our little tiny watches were put together by intelligent people, so we can understand that the sun was put together by at least one intelligent person. It's just logical. Now, we don't like that logic. It means we just don't like reality, that's all. We may claim, I don't believe that the sun came about by some intelligent person. I believe it came about by accident. Well, good for you. Well, let me see, if it came by accident, if you believe it, what is the basis of your belief? Can you demonstrate something? Can you throw up a ball of fire and then we can watch it circumambulate in this room here? And, you know, at night it goes down and during the day it comes up. Show us something that can demonstrate your accident. Now, if you can't, you have no instance, you have no demonstrated, you can't demonstrate anything like it, then your accident is just a product of your imagination. It has nothing to do with science. You can't demonstrate anything. You can't even tell us how it could possibly come about. It's just a concoction. It's just a mental concoction. It's a superstition that you have. It's not science. So we're dealing with science, and my dear sir, you're dealing with science fiction. Now, following that reasoning, and following Krishna's reasoning in Bhagavad Gita, there are so many examples of how we can understand that there is something beyond us. There's energies that are controlling this body. There's energies that are controlling us. There are energies that are controlling the universe. And they're all intelligently controlled. And therefore we conclude that there's an intelligent person behind them. And at least, as Krishna says here, within our present existence, we have to understand that who's ever controlling, namely time, we have to accept time. We have to accept that all living entities are put in an illusion. That we have to accept that who's ever able to control time is controlling the universe. And therefore, if someone's controlling something, we assign them the position of being the proprietor. In other words, for instance, if I have a house and I have some legal agreement, and therefore it's assumed by the state that I'm in control of the house. If someone comes along and tries to take my house, then they're subjected to physical force, to the law of the state, because I'm supposed to be the proprietor. Similarly, in the material world, if time is supreme here, and the person who's behind time, behind the illusory energy that's controlling us, then we can assign him the position as the proprietor. He's actually controlling things, so he's the actual proprietor. He may, if you ask him for his certificate of controlling the universe, he may not give it to you, but that doesn't mean you have any more control. He has absolute control over the universe. You have no control over the universe. Therefore, it doesn't matter if you protest or not. It makes no difference. You may go to the bank and protest, "Sir, my dear bank, Gorsky Bank, why do you have all the money? You should give some of it to me. Why do you claim a proprietorship? I want some of it." Either they'll call the police or they'll just laugh at you. Hopefully they'll laugh at you before they call the police. Similarly, we may deny God's existence. We may not like time. We may not like the fact that we're an illusion. But it makes no difference. Now the next question here is that, so what? So I deny Krishna's existence, I deny time, I deny he's a proprietor, I deny there's illusion, but then we have to pay the price. What is that price? Krishna Bahir Bhuka, Bhogavanchitare, Nikatastamaya, Japatiyadare. The price is that there's Maya, there's a police force called Illusion, and she's put all of us under her, she's arrested all of us. We're all in jail. And if you want to find out what your jail looks like, just look in the mirror. That's this beautiful, wonderful creation that we're all inhabiting, that we love more than anything in this universe. This happens to be our jail cell. And this jail cell happens to be was punishing us with birth, old age, disease, and death, all these different miseries coming from the weather, coming from other living entities, coming from our own bodies. Yeah, we're being punished, but we love it anyhow because we're very loyal. Because that's our tendency. We're servants, and now we become very loyal servants of our gross and subtle body. Now, the other hand is if we accept that there is a person controlling things and he has his energy police force called Maya, then the reverse is there also. If we're following the instructions of the proprietor, then he says he'll release us from this imprisonment. So here's the first part of this verse. Our whole philosophy called Sambandha is concluded in the fact that everything here belongs to Krishna. Ishavasha idam sarvam yat kinchat kinchit tena tatena bunjitaha magridaha kasya sudanam. Everything in the universe is controlled and owned by the Supreme Lord. That's our whole philosophy. Now on that basis, we have what's called abhideya. If we accept it, then we can move on to the next thing. Namely, we should find out from Krishna what he wants us to do with his energy. For instance, if someone gives you any article, for instance, someone gives you one of the few jobs I ever had in my life was I was a runner on Wall Street. You've heard of Wall Street, of course, in America, in New York. I used to take, when I was a college student, well, before I became a college student, the summer before I went to college, my uncle, who was a broker on Wall Street, got me a job. And I used to take these documents of proprietorship of corporations from one office to the next when they sold corporations, whatever. Now, my job was to take the documents and bring them from one part of Wall Street to the next. But if I decided that why should I give this to this person? You know, this document matches the color of my shirt. Why don't I keep it? Well, I can assure you I would have gotten into trouble. I would have been rich for a few minutes, but I would have gotten into a lot of trouble too. So similarly, if something actually belongs to Krishna, and people in Wall Street, they made sure that I knew where I was going. They didn't say, well, here's some documents, why don't you just hand them to someone that you like? No, I knew the address and I was supposed to get there. Similarly, this material energy has a purpose. It wasn't just put here because Krishna had nothing else to do. He said, yeah, just a universe here and a universe there. How do you like it, Radharani? Yeah, it looks pretty nice. Why don't I put one out there too? Krishna didn't create these universes for decoration. You know, a few helpless souls. Yeah, we'll throw a few souls in there. Wow, yeah. No, the whole thing has a purpose, and the purpose, Krishna says, is to perform yajna, sacrifice for Vishnu. So sacrifice means we should find out what Krishna wants us to do. And in order to do that, Krishna has provided Guru Sadhana Shastra. And besides that, he happens to come with us as Super Soul. And he's going, beep, beep, please do this. And we're going, what did you say? Beep, beep. I don't understand you. Beep, beep. Talk a little louder. I can't. I'm yelling. Sorry, I don't want to listen to you. So Krishna is trying to tell us what to do, and we're not listening to him. Because so many people are telling us what to do. We don't know what Krishna is telling us. We don't know what Maya is telling us. And most people don't believe in Krishna. They don't believe he's there. So if they don't believe Krishna is there in the heart, they're definitely not going to listen to him. Like Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu was very angry at Lord Varaha because Lord Varaha had killed his little baby brother, who happened to be half the size of the universe, Hiranyaksha. So Hiranyakashipu went all over the universe trying to find Varaha in order to kill him, try to kill him. So Lord Varaha, Lord Bor, he realized that I'm not supposed to kill Hiranyakashipu. My form is Nrsingadev has to kill him. So he decided he had to escape from him. But Hiranyakashipu was all over the universe. So Lord Varaha decided the only place to go would be in the heart of Hiranyakashipu, hide there, because that's one place Hiranyakashipu never looks at, is his heart. So that's where he entered into Hiranyakashipu's. Through his nose, he went into his heart, and he's still there. Well, he's not there anymore, I guess. So people don't look into their heart. Therefore, Krishna comes as guru, as sadhu, and shastra. And most people don't believe in shastra. Therefore, he comes as guru and sadhu and tries to convince people that actually what Krishna is saying is true. Like, for instance, our bodies are changing, but we're not changing. And that time is changing everything, etc. So shastra is not meant to be so esoteric that no one understands what it's about, no one understands how to apply it. Basically, it's all based upon the principle that Krishna is owner of everything, therefore we should find out what Krishna wants us to do. And if we don't want to do devotional service, then Krishna has given us the Vedas, Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Tarva Veda, so we can do complicated rituals and with the understanding this is what Vishnu wants us to do. We can spend lifetimes doing sacrifices and collecting ghee and all these other things and gold and jewels and throw them into a fire. And all of the idea is Krishna says, do this. Or we can offer Krishna a leaf, a fruit, some flour, some water, and do it with some love because Krishna also wants us to do that. And that will take the place of performing a Ashvamedha Yajna or other kinds of Agnihotra or whatever. Rajasuya Yajna, which we can't do anyhow. But the basic idea is that we should be obedient to Krishna. And we should find out what Krishna wants to do through his representatives. And basically, Krishna wants us to do something for him out of love. Now, Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī has given us, for instance, Nectar of Devotion or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu to explain these, especially five powerful processes of chanting Hare Krishna, hearing Śrīmad Bhāgavatam, Bhagavad Gita, hearing Śrīmad, worshipping the deities, serving the devotees, and making the atmosphere spiritual, living in a holy place. So there are things we can do that Krishna doesn't say, you have to stand on one finger and then do backflips. That's what I want you to do. He makes it a little bit more easy for everyone. Basically, he wants us to do something for him out of love. So if we accept that, and we find out what Krishna wants us to do, by a humble inquiry, and then be willing to render service, then the next thing is explained here. So that's called Abhideya. We found out that the Sambandha is everything belongs to Krishna, and the Abhideya is we should find out what Krishna wants to do with what belongs to him, including our body, our mind, and our words, and everything else in relationship to those things. Now, the third thing which makes the devotional service rather than just ordinary service, is we should do it to please Krishna. In other words, Prabhupada writes here, this word matparaha is very important in this verse. One should have no goal in life, save and accept to act in Krishna consciousness just to satisfy Krishna. So that idea has to be there, that Krishna is actually all-attractive, loving personality, and that we can actually do something to please him. And that's our eternal position as his loving servant. And that can be revealed to us when we do something favorably. I mean, pleasing may have different levels of pleasing him. For instance, there may be a level when we're simply obedient. There may be a level where we're a little bit enthusiastic. There may be a level where we're actually affectionate. And there may be a level where it's actually done out of real pure love. So at least pleasing Krishna should be, I'm being obedient to Krishna, I'm doing what he wants me to do, because I know at least on some level that will be pleasing to Krishna. And then maybe I'm enthusiastic. Of course, that would be even more pleasing to Krishna, that I have no other motivation. I'm simply happily doing this to please Krishna. So there may be different levels, and therefore there will be different levels of reciprocation. But as Prabhupada explains here, that reciprocation appears in the form of remembrance. That is, Krishna and his name are non-different, so Krishna's form, his quality, his pastimes, and associates are all non-different from him. And our reward for performing devotional service correctly is that we'll remember Krishna. And we'll remember Krishna gradually in such a way as that we'll remember his forms, his quality. Qualities means that we'll actually experience, we'll be able to feel Krishna's presence, and that will first be experienced as transcendent, as pleasure. Pleasing atmosphere, then the pleasureful atmosphere, then an ecstatic atmosphere, then eventually a loving atmosphere, depending upon our level of absorption in remembering and experiencing Krishna. One time they asked Prabhupada how we should chant, and Prabhupada said we should chant attentively, and then we should try to feel Krishna's presence. That our experience, when we chant attentively, then of course we have to use our intelligence. But when we apply both our intelligence and our feelings or our mind, then Krishna consciousness becomes more complete. Then we can actually, if Krishna sees our sincerity, if we're not materially motivated, then he'll allow us to feel his presence. And that will be the most direct level of developing our Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is not just developed intellectually, it's developed by intelligence applied to feelings. In the spiritual world, people are not intellectually serving Krishna, they're lovingly serving Krishna out of their spontaneous feelings. So unless we add our feelings to our practice of Krishna consciousness, then it remains dry, speculation. And if we just apply our feelings and we don't apply any intelligence, then we become fanatics. So both have to be there. Then when we remember Krishna, then when we become absorbed enough, we can feel his presence. And that feeling of presence will actually burn away the accumulated illusion that we've accumulated as cedo darpanam arjanam, will clear our hearts of lust, anger, greed, illusion, etc. And the result is that what was perceived intellectually or theoretically before will become experienced. It will be seen as a reality, as it actually is. Now, Prabhupada also writes at the end of this verse that if one doesn't follow this process and just does what everyone wants, that activity is not on the platform of Krishna consciousness. We can't just do everything we want, and at the end we say, well, Krishna, you know, you accept the part that I don't like. I don't want. Prabhupada gives the example of a man who's carrying puffed rice on a plate, and then the wind comes and takes it away, and the man cries out, Govinda Bhog, you can have it, Govinda. So we do things, and then afterwards, in an afterthought, we offer the result to Krishna if we happen to remember Krishna for some reason. That's not in Krishna consciousness. In other words, the meditation should be that I'm a servant. I'm a servant of Krishna, who's the proprietor of everything. And I'm working under his direction of Guru Sadhana Shastra, confirmed by himself as the Super Soul in my heart. He's giving me the intelligence to understand what Guru Sadhana Shastra want me to do, and it's clear. And if it's not clear, Krishna is not making it clear to us, it means that we have to become more humble, and we have to investigate more, and we have to give up some of our material desires until Krishna actually makes it clear through Guru Sadhana Shastra what he wants us to do. And then if we do it to please him, then the result is that Krishna might, if he actually sees our sincerity, help us remember him. And if we remember him according to the degree or the absorption remembering, then we might be able, Krishna might allow us or give us the intelligence how to feel his presence. And if we feel his presence, then we'll be in ecstasy, and therefore everything will become clear. And in ecstasy, then it becomes self-evident that Krishna and his name are non-different, that Krishna and his forms are non-different, and that what is spiritual, what it means spiritual, is not just an intellectual term, it's an actual experience. And from that ecstasy, when our heart becomes purified, then we'll be able to see things as they actually are, rather than as we're imagining them to be now. But if we don't follow that process, and we just do whatever we feel like it, and then we think we're in Krishna consciousness, then we'll be wrong. And Prabhupada writes, that order of Krishna comes down through the simple succession from the bona fide spiritual master. So if one gets a bona fide spiritual master and acts according to his direction, then one's success in life and Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. So it's not that anything that the spiritual master says, if I just follow that, then my success in life and Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. No, the bona fide spiritual masters in disciple succession, this is what they're teaching us, that Krishna is the proprietor. We should find out what to do with our energies in order to please Krishna, what his mission is, what his purpose is, and how we fit into that mission and purpose. And then to do it, to please him, without any other consideration of pleasing ourselves or our family or some other idea of why we're doing things. Specifically, Krishna has asked me to do this. Krishna wants me to do this. Become conscious, Krishna says in this verse. Be fully conscious of me. Except that the reason why I'm here is because Krishna put me here. And the reason why I'm doing this is because Krishna wants me to do it. And what do I want to do? I want to please Krishna through this activity. Then we'll become Krishna conscious. And the order of the spiritual master is one part of that. The order of the spiritual master means also to understand this philosophy, to understand exactly what Krishna wants us to do, and to do it in such a way as to please him. Now it just so happens that Krishna is not only in the heart of the bona fide spiritual master, he happens in the heart of all devotees. He happens in the heart of the temple president, the GBC, the temple commander. He's in the heart of so many authorities that we have. So they should all agree with each other. Otherwise, we're going to imagine that Krishna is schizophrenic. That Krishna has some idea in the heart of the temple president, but in the heart of my initiating guru or my shiksha guru, Krishna is giving him a different message. So poor Krishna, he's schizophrenic, he's just confusing everyone, giving him a different idea of what he wants me to do. Now Krishna has one message, and that same message should be, if we hear it correctly, he simply wants us to participate in his movement, to be a useful servant in his mission, and all these different authorities should have the same mission, namely to spread Krishna consciousness, to help us become Krishna conscious. So if there's a disagreement between our authorities, it's not that we're free to do whatever we like and just choose whatever authority we like at that moment and just, you know, hope for the best. No, hopefully our authorities all come together, unity and diversity, and they all give us the same direction so we know exactly what Krishna wants us to do. We can be confident what Krishna wants us to do, and we don't have to decide on our own which authority to accept and which ones to reject. Otherwise, we'll think Krishna has a different message in different people's hearts, which is not true. So, therefore, we should inquire from our authorities. Maybe they should get together and come up with the same kind of direction for us before we do anything. Otherwise, we'll be doing things in confusion. And ultimately, when we do find out, then we can act with conviction. And acting in conviction, we could try to do something which would be ultimately confident that it's not only pleasing to Krishna, but it's pleasing to Krishna's devotees also. That by watering the root, we're also satisfying the leaves and branches. Not that we're watering one part of the root and all the other leaves and branches are drying up. Now, if we actually got to the root, then all the leaves and branches will be equally benefited. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the lecture. I have a question regarding in society now. Days we are hearing from many people like this sentence, follow your heart. And since Krishna is our heart, is this precise direction, like follow your heart, or is there any danger in following your heart?
Well, if it was no danger following your heart, then the whole society should be blissful and happy and enlightened. Because that's what everyone's doing, is following their heart. It just so happens Krishna is in our heart, but Maya is also in our heart. So following our heart, no, we don't say follow your heart, we say follow Krishna, who's in your heart. You find out what Krishna wants you to do from within your heart through following Guru, Sadhana, and Shastra. We don't say follow your heart, we say follow Krishna in your heart by finding out from Guru, Sadhana, and Shastra. Or else you'll be just like everyone else. Just, you know, following their heart. And by following their heart, they're just whimsically not following their heart. They're following their senses, their mind, their mental concoctions, how to gratify their senses.
So there is some danger in following your heart.
Well, if you think society is completely happy and peaceful and progressive and there's no danger in society at all, if it's not obvious, then you may ask, you know, wondering whether it's danger or not. You think this is... any problems in modern society?
I think there are.
Are people following their hearts?
They are.
Yeah, so I guess it's self-evident.
Hare Krishna, thank you.
Anything else? Yes.
Could I just ask you if you could comment on certain austerities. So if one wants to perform certain austerity, for example, fast, in order to satisfy Krishna, there is danger that he will overwhelm himself, so that he won't make it in a proper mood. So could you please give advice how to find balance between the range of the activity you make for Krishna in between the proper mood, so that you are not depressed while doing it?
Well, I think every individual has to know what's the difference between atyahara, eating too much, and priyasas, collecting too much, doing too many activities, over-endeavoring. So, generally speaking, because we don't know what the balance is, and we don't think about what the balance should be, therefore we eat too much, or eat too little, or we over-endeavor, or we don't do enough. So that takes some intelligence. And if we don't have the intelligence, we should find out from people who have intelligence how to have a balanced program. But it's up to us to have a balanced program. No one is going to, you know, force you to have a balanced program.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. Grandaraj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.